Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very accomplished entrepreneur and author from Tasmania, Australia, Mr. Andrew Griffiths. Andrew, welcome to the show.
It's such a pleasure to be here with you, Ash. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Andrew is an entrepreneurial futurist. He specializes in future-proofing businesses across virtually every industry. He's a published author, and I, all of you know, I'm very partial to authors. He's got 14 published books, and his latest book is Someone Has to Be the Most Expensive, Why Not Make It You? So, Andrew, before we talk about entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial futurist, tell me a little bit about your own journey in brief.
Yeah, sure. I had a bit of an unusual journey, I guess you would say. I grew up as an orphan, so I didn't grow up in the traditional kind of sense of, you know, parenting and all that type of stuff. So I was brought up by an old lady when I was a baby, 6 months old. My parents had left my sister and myself. She was 18 months old. And so we had one of those upbringings that is quite dysfunctional in many ways. And it's really interesting because I followed that pathway of dysfunctionality until I was about 17. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just not really having direction and not really knowing what to do. And just you tend to go to the bad parts of life as opposed to the positive things. Mm-hmm. But I bought my first business when I was 17. Wow. And I had no entrepreneurial role models. I had there was no one in my life who I would kind of look to and say, oh, I'd admire them because mm-hmm. of what they did. But I'd learned how to scuba dive, and I got a part-time job in a dive shop, and I ended up buying the dive shop. Wow. And I became an entrepreneur. Mm. And I found my way in life through that. And I know this may sound a little bit melodramatic, but it saved my life. I think if I didn't find that, my path and my trajectory would have been very different. And I was very fortunate. I had no idea what I was doing, of course. I made every business mistake known to mankind. Yeah, right. But I had a responsibility, and I had I learned about money. I learned about how to deal with people. I learned how to sell. I learned how to be an entrepreneur, and it fitted me well. And I've been doing that for 40 years. So
amazing, yeah. Chad. Thank you for sharing this. So, Andrew, you also refer to yourself as an entrepreneurial futurist. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be an entrepreneurial futurist?
Well, these days we've got to come up with terms, right? Mm-hmm. That look smart and clever. Correct. and position ourselves. But really, I think what I'm asked to do a lot, either in speaking or in my books or even just in thought leadership kind of content, is I'm asked about future proofing. Like, what do we need to do to future proof ourselves in the world? And I get asked to do that in environments which may be for individuals. Mm-hmm. What do I need to do as an individual to future proof myself from a career point of view, etc. I get asked for companies. But people get me to come in and say, well, this is what our business is. What do I need to do to make sure that we're still around in 10 years, mm-hmm. 20 years, 30 years? And I've worked a lot with companies around the world on that. And the third part about that is I've also asked about how do we future-proof industries? And so as an example, I spoke at an event for the mass participation industry, which is mm-hmm. marathons and things in Singapore a little while back. And it's a relatively new industry. It's like a toddler in terms of maturity. Yeah. And their question for me was, what do we need to be doing to make sure that we're, as an industry, we're growing and evolving and we're actually going to be around in 20 or 30 years' time when the world is very different? So that's really what I do.
Fascinating. And for my viewers and listeners, can you give me one or two interesting stories of how you actually were able to predict the future may be wrong, but if you were able to just see what may happen.
I think that there's a few different things you look at it and you experience. You know, you've been doing what you do very successfully for a long time. There's things that you pick up and there's things that you learn as a result of that. Yeah. And I think that for me, that's a part of that. So I looked at the mass participation industry, and one of the things a few of the things that you would look at very strongly is there's no structured pathway for people to learn, to grow, to develop in the industry. You can't have an industry that's going to be around if people can't learn about it. You know, that was a big issue. There was no path or logical pathway for women to be in influential and decision-making roles in that industry.
Right.
I look at that and go, you know, as an industry, you know, these days where we've got to be inclusive, you know, you've got to change it because it's a boys club and there is no room for boys clubs in the world anymore. So those kind of elements are there, but also another part of that though is how self-aware is the industry. So the industry is very good at putting on an event for 20,000 people or 100,000 people to run for a day, but they were terrible and are terrible at creating a model which is more than a one-day model. You know, which is, you know, engaging with people, families, building, you know, like doing all like tech, bringing tech in. And so for me, I might look at individuals, a company or an industry and be able to point out, well, I think these are the challenges that you're facing. If you don't address those, the future is unlikely, just as we would look at a company and say, well, what you're offering is no longer in demand by people. So you've got to come up with something new. So I've had the fortune of doing a lot of work in Japan, and it's been very interesting for me to see some of the old Japanese kind of culture. And I worked for 5 years. The only time I wasn't in my own business, I worked for a Japanese shipping company. And the first day I joined them, Ash, they gave me their 100-year plan. And they said, here's our 100-year plan. And I thought it would just be a nice promotional brochure with fluff and bubbles. It was an amazing strategy about exactly how they would adapt and evolve for the next 100 years, taking into consideration world wars, pandemics, natural disasters, economic disasters. They, in this document, they had predicted so many of the things that, this was 30 years ago, so many things that came to happen. And that's when I kind of went, wow, you can plan this. You can
deal with it. Correct. Great response. Thank you. My next question is, Andrew, how important is technology in shaping the future of entrepreneurship?
Wow. Geez. I think it's essential, but I think that we also have to have some very, very good other skills. I think technology alone is not enough.
Correct.
It's a great quote. I love the quote by Alvin Toffler that says, the illiterate of the 21st century won't be those who can't read or write, but those who can't learn, unlearn, and relearn. And I quote that often. What I find in my world with writing and speaking and coaching and doing all of that stuff is that you can be all about tech, right? But if you haven't got a great brand, you know, like if you can't engage, if you are not a, you know, doing good things kind of person, if you're not, you know, building that credibility behind the scenes, all the tech in the world will not help. All the tech in the world, it's a tool. That's all it is. And my concern, Ash, is a little bit more that in a world of tech, that a lot of the fundamentals are lost. You know, even with AI, well, we don't need to write books anymore. We just get AI to do it. Now, you and I both know that AI can write a functional book, but it can't write a great book. You know, and you know, AI can do a nice graphic, but it can't have the emotional intelligence that we bring to the table. And I think that tech can make us lazy if we're not careful. And I'm seeing a lot of that at the moment. Everyone wants to build a company, you know, make a unicorn, sell it for $1 billion in a week. And you go, it's just not the reality of doing business.
Yeah, well said. And what role, in your opinion, does innovation play?
Well, I think that innovation is an intrinsic part of being an entrepreneur.
Right.
I think that the definition of entrepreneur for me has got innovation in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the great joys about doing business now. Definitely. You know, I think it's just awesome, the ability for, you know, you can see an idea, you can use a tool of tech and AI and all the rest of it, come up with a solution to a problem, you know, make it happen. If you've got all the right parts, wow, you can do something better. Mm. And I think that as entrepreneurs, you know, we've got to be innovative all the time. I met a company that I came across in Japan. They've been around for well over 100 years, and mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of them, but I got to meet their grandson. And this business started, and they used to work side by side with Toyota. So when Toyota used to make sewing machines, they used to make parts for the sewing machines. Mm-hmm. When Toyota started making cars, they made parts. When Toyota made satellites, they made parts for the satellites. And I met the grandson, and I said, through a translator, like, how has your business managed to have been so successful for so long? And he said his grandfather started the business, and one thing that he instigated was that every Thursday morning, three people were chosen out of that business to sit in a room for 3 hours and ponder one question. And that question was, what are we going to sell when people no longer want to buy what we're selling today?
What a great question.
What a great question. And he said, and that they are constantly, you know, we've got all these skills, got all these resources, rah, rah, rah. What do we do when people don't want satellite parts or car parts or sewing machine parts? And so they constantly had to come up to adapt and be innovative. And I think it's such a great question to ask.
Correct.
You know, and we see, you know, actually in our lifetime, we've seen so many companies that have failed to ask that question that are no longer here. Simply because they didn't innovate.
Correct. And, you know, given all the work that you've done with so many companies and entrepreneurs, what would you say are some strategies to overcome failure and setbacks?
Well, I don't know that you actually need to overcome them. Mm-hmm. I look at someone like yourself, a very successful man. I know that your list of failures would be as tall, if not taller, than your list of successes.
Correct. That's but I have written a book on failure also.
Right. Okay. And that's why you're successful. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I could talk for days about mm-hmm. what I've got wrong.
Correct.
You know, but do we dwell in mm-hmm. you know, in that? I mean, we learn so much more mm-hmm. out of failure than we do out of success, mm-hmm. in my view. And I know that can be, I feel like it's a bit of a cliche mm-hmm. to say that, but I don't know anyone that can't rattle off their 10 biggest mistakes.
Correct.
The 10, you know, the wrong partner, the wrong this, the, you know, I backed this, I should have backed mm-hmm. that. But same in life. You know, I look at, you know, things that have happened to me throughout my life. I'm a commercial diver by trade. So that's where, you know, my background is commercial work. I got decompression sickness when I was working for that Japanese company. Mm-hmm. Now, that was the end of my diving career, you know, and for me, it was devastating. It was the end of the world, right? And whose fault, you know, blah, blah, blah. You play victim. But what it was this extraordinary crossroad, which led to me working for them Correct. For 5 years as a sales manager, traveling around the world, learning all this stuff. So, you know, that to me is what those failures are. Mm. They're crossroads, and we can either be a victim and I blame him and her and the economy, or we go, look, that happened. Man, I'm stronger. I'm better. I'm smarter as a result of that mistake.
Well,
That to me is what this is all about. Mm. You know, I would not take a single mistake back in my life. Not one. As painful as many of them were, and as traumatic as many of them were, they've all, even being an orphan, would you want to go back and have beautiful? No, because that childhood gave me the inner fortitude, the strength, the character to be who I am. And I think that appreciating and understanding that as opposed to playing victim is a big part of the role that mistakes play.
Great response. Thank you. My next question is that what, in your view, are some of the key skills and qualities that entrepreneurs will need to thrive in the future?
It's an excellent question, isn't it? I think about this a lot. And I think it actually goes back to a bit of that quote, the Alvin Toffler quote, you know, learn, unlearn, and relearn. Ash, and I think that we definitely you need the ability to adapt and evolve and stay relevant. Mm. I think once you lose relevance, you never get it back. A business Correct. Never gets it back. And I think that that's something that people don't quite get, that you're actually in a war for relevance every single day, mm. not in 3 or 4 years, today, because someone could come up with a product that's doesn't even need to be the same as yours. It's just going to compete with you financially. Like, I'm not going to buy that anymore because I'm going to spend mm. my money over here. Mm. You know, someone's always going to be faster, cheaper, mm. you know, more bells and whistles, better. So if you're not able to really adapt, evolve, and stay relevant, mm. I can't see how you can stay in business in the future. I think the second part of that, though, which I think is a really great opportunity, are soft skills. I think we have to be very good at communicating. We mm. have to be very good at things like storytelling. We have to be very good at, you know, even managing ourselves, managing our teams, you know, being able to do all of those kind of things. Yep. And in the world that we live in at the moment, there's skills that are sliding behind because we're all, you know, utilizing tech. And I really see that now. Big demand for me is about teaching people how to communicate better. Mm. And I go, that's interesting how that's been starting to come to the front in the last 10 years. You know, I think there's a really interesting element around that. And the third part about it is, I believe that you have to have the ability. You've got to be extraordinarily curious.
Mm.
Curiosity now is always been so important, but mm. now more than ever, it's that those questions. What if, you know, or maybe more importantly, you know, instead of why not? Mm. Why can't we do that? Like, you know, there's so many problems and so many things out there that can be fixed. Most of it starts from someone asking a better question, which again, mm. I know we've heard that before, and we've, you know, I'm sure you've probably written a book about it, you know, but I look at that and go, they're fundamentals that are in there. Adapt, evolve, stay relevant, you know, like learn to communicate, you know, it's so, you know, so important. And then, you know, the last part there, you know, around that. And I think you tie those three together, that they become the essential skills for entrepreneurs.
Fascinating.
In the future.
Mm. So one more question, and then I want to move to your book. How do you see the future of work evolving, and what implications does it have for entrepreneurs?
Mm. It's interesting. A little while ago, I did a presentation at a university here called Griffith University. And this is just before COVID, so mm-hmm. about 3, maybe 4 years ago. And they asked me to come and present about the future of work. And I said, oh, look, to be honest, I'm more of the future of business than opposed to the future of work. But I did a presentation, and it was interesting for me because many of the jobs that we've all heard about, even that amount of time ago, I'm kind of going, I'm not really sure that these are going to happen. Because I've read the articles, I've read the stuff from 10 years ago. Most of the jobs that we're going to be doing haven't been invented yet. You know, we all have heard that. But I actually did this presentation about the 20 jobs of the future type thing, and that was what was going on in my mind. But in that 4 years, they're all around. These jobs have all appeared. These jobs Correct. Have all become a reality. And I look Correct. At that and go, wow, that was kind of interesting. But one of the parts that was quite fascinating for me was the overlap between entrepreneurs and people and that were getting degrees, that were looking for careers.
Mm-hmm.
So looking for jobs, looking for work, more and more of those qualified people are going to work with entrepreneurs as opposed to the corporate kind of world. And that's an interesting change
mm.
because they're going to the entrepreneurs, the business owners, because of variety, because of excitement, because of an ability to make a change, to, you know, there's just more opportunity in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things the university got me to do was to teach these people how to communicate, because mm-hmm. the academics don't know how to talk to the business owners, and Correct. The business owners don't know how to talk to the academics. So we had to do like a speed dating mm-hmm. kind of a setup. And that's, I see that future of work going more and more into the entrepreneurial space. Mm-hmm. You know, like now we've all got VAs, yep. we've all got, you know, we're all now getting AI VAs, we're all getting this, we're all getting that.
Yep.
You know, the opportunity for jobs is growing. The opportunity in corporates is actually decreasing now.
Mm.
You know, so it's a very interesting state of flux, Ash.
Fascinating. So Andrew, let's not talk about your latest book, Someone Has to Be the Most Expensive. Why not make it you? And before I ask you a question, I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out Andrew Griffith's book. I'm going to check it out myself. So tell me about your book and what was your hypothesis when you wrote it?
Well, it was actually based on observation. I grew up with a poverty mentality. Mm-hmm. And I say to people, you know, I spent the first 17 years of my life being told that I had no value, mm-hmm. and the rest of my life kind of proving otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But I ran my first business with a poverty mentality for the first mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years because I didn't know what that was.
Correct.
But I was price-driven, cheap, because the guy I bought the business off, it was all about being cheap. Mm-hmm. If you weren't cheap, people wouldn't buy. And there was always a bit of fear around money and all that kind of jazz. But I was very fortunate that I had some good mentors that taught me an alternative, and the business boomed. It like I completely changed everything. And that was my first taste.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, as I started to write books and started to do my own stuff, and I, you know, travel around the planet and meet lots of business owners and get asked to do stuff, the one reoccurring topic that kept coming up was people not charging enough for what they do, not valuing what they do. And I would come across businesses where they were really, really good at what they do, Ash, really good, but they were giving it away. And the business could never be fully profitable, even if they were fully booked. Like a restaurant, even if they were fully booked every night, they still wouldn't make a profit. Yet they couldn't see that. Even if you're showing it in front of them, the numbers, you've got to charge more. Simple as that. Like at the moment, costs are escalating.
Yep.
You have no choice but to put up your prices, because every 10% they're going up, you're losing 20%, 25% of your net profit.
Correct.
You know, so I encountered this a lot over the years. I encountered it in every country in the world that I went to. And I've been talking about it, but I needed to write the book about it. And it feels like when I'm writing it now, it's very timely. There's, you know, understanding your value. Understanding, you may not want to be the most expensive. That might be too much, but the further you are away from being the cheapest, the better. You know, that's my moral and my drive. Like you, and we had a lovely conversation just before we started about your background and what you do now. Actually, a big part of this for me is it just breaks my heart to see people who are really good at what they're doing, you know, struggling. And I just want to see them charging what they're worth, because now people are prepared to pay for what you're worth as well. Mm-hmm. And that's a big shift. So there's a bit of a meeting, aligning of the planets, I think, Ash.
Yeah, well said. And my last question to you, Andrew, and this is for thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your own incredible journey, you know, entrepreneur at 17, published author, working up with organizations around the world, what would you say are three lessons you would want a lot of our young viewers and listeners to take away?
It's a great question. So I'd probably give it 1,000 lessons, like yourself. But if I was going to, you know, kind of really pick the three lessons, I think the first lesson I would suggest is to have humility at every step of the path. I think it's such an important part. Is I don't care how successful you become, whether you're a billionaire, whatever it is, I think that you need to have humility and respect for human beings.
Correct.
And I have great respect for everyone on the planet, not just the CEO of the company, not just the leader, for the receptionist, for everyone. Treat people with absolute respect. And that will go a long way to building your brand down the line. And I've spent 57 years building my personal brand. And, you know, that's the first part. The second part is an awareness around the mistakes that we spoke about before, these crossroads. I think there are always crossroads that you'll come across.
Yeah.
And whether you go left or whether you go right, you know, it doesn't really matter, strangely enough. It's not necessarily always about making the right decision. It's about understanding it's a crossroad, and they're pivotal in our going forward. and you'll make mistakes. But if you resort to blaming the mistakes and being a victim and doing all of that stuff, you've missed the lesson of the mistake. Mm. And this is that pathway of getting better, you know, getting better as a human being. And the third thing is, I believe it's so critically important to have the right people around you who won't just tell you what you want to hear. They'll tell you the truth. When I was 18, I was given a copy of the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by a chap that was working for me. And it was a book I needed to read. And he very kindly said, he was fabulous with people. And I was young, you know, arrogant, you know, not very emotionally intelligent. Mm-hmm. And he very gently said, oh, you might find this book helpful. You know, like as one of those kind of general things. And of course I read it and I realized what he was trying to say. And he changed my entire life.
Oh, wonderful.
And that book changed my entire life. Mm-hmm. And so we need those people who aren't just going to say, oh, Ash, you're amazing, you're wonderful, you're this. We need those people who say, hey, you know, is that really on brand for you? Is that really, are you acting with integrity?
Right.
Are you treating, you know, all of those things. And I'm more grateful to those people in my life than I am to the people who say, Andrew, you're amazing, or you've done this, or you've done that. The people that are honest with me, I haven't liked to hear it at the time, but I appreciate and value them. And I think we got to have those people in our lives.
Wonderful. And on that note, Andrew, and your three wonderful lessons, have humility and respect human beings, have an awareness of your own mistakes. And the third, which is so powerful, have the right people around you. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own journey. Thank you for speaking to me about so many different aspects of entrepreneurial futurism and all the great work that you're doing, advising so many companies future-proof their businesses. Thank you also for speaking to me about your book. Thank you again and good luck.
Such a pleasure. And thank you for having me on the show. I greatly appreciate it. It's been lovely to chat to you as well, Ash. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.